we requested them members of the court when we were considering, I think, their annual report. We just needed in this area of focus to understand the state of court and also to understand why are the current efforts to have anti-dumping not effective. We all related our experiences. We would want to know if there are areas where we could help. I know the department wanted to amend the ISA Act for this current financial year. But due to time constraints, we're not able to do anything. But I'm hoping that for the sixth parliament, this is one of the legislation that will be amended. But it is important that we note those areas that really need the policy adjustments, if possible. Make this opportunity then to welcome everyone there, and more especially our guests. The ITEC under the leadership of Mr. Zimande. We welcome you and we appreciate the fact that you were able to come. We have received your presentation, which is about communication. Thank you very much for that. We went through it and we'll be able to, I guess my colleagues also will be able to engage on that after you have made your presentation. May I, before I call you to give us a presentation, request the secretary to give us a policy.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wish to put on record that we have received three apologies for today's meeting. First is from Mr. Piccanini, MP, who's attending the meeting of the Corporate Committee on Mineral Resources. The second is from Ms. Sokonyana of Economic Freedom Fighters, who's sending an apology saying that she's attending to organizational duties. And the third is just Mr. Patrick Atkinson, who will be arriving at about 10 a.m. this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. After receiving those apologies, we will then proceed to allowing the Chief Commissioner to give us the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Chief Minister. Good morning to all the honorable members who are gathered here. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to all the honorable members and good morning to everybody who is here this morning. Thank you for the opportunity that you have given us today to address you on import control and enforcement. Let me first start by stating the premise from which ITEC conduct its work. The ITEC, the International Trade Administration Commission, is a body that is created by the International Trade Administration Act. And that act has as its object to grow, to contribute to the growth of the economy in order to grow income, investment, and employment. And ITEC is then charged with administering its trade instruments or the trade instruments that are set up in the Act in an effort to contribute to that. So primarily we work to contribute to economic growth. We work to contribute to growth in investment. We work to contribute to growth in employment. We work to contribute to areas in which we do our work, or two primary categories of instruments that we use to do our work. We've got the permit-based system, in terms of which a category of import is allowed to enter the country, provided the person has a permit to bring it into the country. Or the other category is import may enter the country, provided certain duties are paid in respect of those imports. So again, the duties are imposed in order to support particular economic outcomes. We do the same on the export side, where you give a permit to export certain materials. Again, the intention might be to retain or to control the volumes of product that are exported in order to retain enough of that product in South Africa for local consumption to support local industries that use or consume that product. Alternatively, to impose a duty, and again, that duty is intended to encourage the export of that product. And the idea, again, being the right quality of that product is retained in South Africa for consumption to support, or consumption for use to support local industry. So that's the primary function, is to contribute to the economic development. That's what our work is designed to do. We do, however, work with other departments to control or to issue permits in respect of things that are products that are of environmental concern or and the like. But that's not the big question for me. I had prepared this slide to talk primarily about the permit-based control of the work that ISEC does. But I will move quickly more to address what the chairperson has raised in her opening remarks, on which I only actually had one slide, which is on what I say in that slide is that the permit-based regulation, which is performed primarily by our import and export control unit, should be distinguished from trade regulation that is based on tariffs and to a certain degree on quotas. We hardly ever use quotas, actually. Most of what we do are tariffs. And what is important to note there is that in that universe, the overarching framework within which South Africa operates is the framework that is defined by the World Trade Organization, the WTO, and specifically the World Trade WTO Agreement of 1994, which South Africa is a party to and signed back in 1993. The core of that agreement is, or the two fundamental principles of that agreement is, one, free trade. So, in order to enable free trade, what South Africa agreed to was that you local producers of the same product. So if you manufacture, if there's an American company that manufactures water bottles and a South African company that manufactures water bottles, you don't discriminate. That is the first thing. And then the second principle is what is called the most favored nation. If you are going to give your friend's country, say Cuba, an advantage, say you impose a 10% duty on this water when it comes from the UK, but we decide to give Cuba a 5% duty when it comes from Cuba, the MFN principle says that 5% must be extended to all other WTO members. So you don't discriminate on the basis of it. There are, of course, exceptions where you are lawfully allowed to discriminate under the WTO, and that is if there is a free trade agreement or a bilateral free trade agreement with, in this instance, in our example, Cuba, which complies with the WTO. And then the other reason you are allowed to deviate from your commitment to liberalize trade, before I get there. So one of the things that South Africa has done is to say, with respect to duty, a certain maximum amount of duty, a quantum or a percentage of duty, beyond which it will not go. I'll give you two examples. One example, let's take cement. Cement, as far as ordinary customs duties are concerned, South Africa is committed to not imposing any or to a 0%. So for cement, you can't impose the tariff beyond zero. Contrast this with chicken. With chicken, South Africa is committed to itself to aim to apply duties as high as 85%. So all goods that South Africa trades, you know, that are listed in the schedule, have got their individual boundary. And when we use ordinary customs duties, we can't go beyond that boundary. So that is the one constraint that we have in our way. We can only impose a maximum duty that is permissible under South Africa's obligation or commitment as a WTO. If I use steel, steel typically our boundary range between 10 and 15%. Tires, they range between 20 and 50%. So there's different ranges. So as a matter of policy, because having those types that's the policy instruments, we are limited in what we can do. And those duties can be imposed whether you're dealing with goods that are exported to South Africa or imported into South Africa fairly, i.e. at a fair price, or unfairly. They are pure policy based. So it's ministers in this industry under the rest of the state in particular impose duty on that. We investigate when a case is made up of duty to impose, we impose those up to the bottom. And then the WTO then creates a mechanism where you then are able to exceed the boundaries, that is to go above the boundaries. In the case of cement, for instance, let us use it, which I said is bound at 0%, you can go above that boundary in the following circumstances. One, if you can show that cement is done in South Africa, in my example. So, a few years ago, for instance, Pakistani cement was being dumped in South Africa and was injured in the local industry. An anti-dumping application was instituted, was also cited by the industry, cement industry, as a result of which duties were imposed against Pakistani companies and Pakistani as a country. Some of the duties, for example, that were imposed, they were as high as, I think, 4.45. So what you can see there is that whereas the boundary on cement is zero, the WTO says if you are dealing with unfair trade that comes in, we are allowed to exceed the boundary. In this instance, we have the issue that we include that we were entitled to. So that's the anti-dumping issue. It meant specifically to respond to what's called unfair trade in the form of dumping. And just to remind honourable members, dumping is really means if this bottle is sold, or if this bottle is made in Nigeria. When you sell it in Pakistan, to the domestic consumer in Pakistan, you sell it for hundreds of say dollars per bag. But when you export it to South Africa, you export it at $30 a bag. So that's the difference between 130 and the margin of, I mean, 130 in the margin of dumping, in my example, which is $70. So when South Africa imposes to fight that, and it may only do, South Africa may only do that if it shows, or the industry shows, that those dumped goods are actually harming the industry, causing jobs, causing loss of profits, loss of market share, and the like. So that's the one instance where you can deviate. The second instance where you can deviate from the boundary is in relation to what we call a subsidized input. So let us take an example of many years ago, imports of steel wire broke a cable, the cables that are used to hoist, lift, or to connect to finance or to operate with mining equipment, the ropes that are made of steel were being imported into South Africa from India, and ISEC in that investigation discovered that they were being subsidized to the tune of 17% by the Indian government. So what subsidization means is that the product, the local producers or the producers in that country of that product receive a certain benefit from government, which when quantified amounts to 17% of the cost of production. So if again, I'll use this phrase, so if it's a rope, a mining rope, a steel wire rope in my example, it would ordinarily cost $100 to make this rope. Then the government says, okay, of that 100, we give you 17 rand, in example. So the party does not incur the full cost of production, it only incurs 83 rand, with the government making the balance of 17 rand. So what South Africa would then do, or any other non-economic government, that when that group comes to South Africa, you then impose what is called a countervailing duty that offsets that government subsidy. I should mention, in relation to countervailing duties, honourable members, that it's not an instrument that we have used often. I don't have off the top of my head the number of times that we've used it, but I've given an example where it was used in relation to steel wire rope many years ago. The problem with countervailing duties is not really an item problem, it's more, I would say, there seems to be a reluctance by South Africa to use this instrument because primarily the users of this instrument outside agricultural goods are developing countries. In my example, for instance, I mentioned India. India is a failed country because it's part of it. And typically, subsidies are used by countries in their development that they try and grow their industry. So there's some reluctance by South Africa to use this instrument. However, us as ISEC as a technical body, if we receive an application for countervailing duties, we will not receive. The only question is when our recommendation goes out to the minister receiving the application, or when the affected country like China feels that we are acting in response to subsidized people, they then choose to do our work and do it and make our recommendations to the head and the minister. That's the honorable members, the other exception that allows you to go beyond the boundary is in relation to what's called a rapid, unexpected, or rapid sudden surge or increase in import volumes of a particular item. And the response to that takes the form of what's called safeguard duty. So the nature of the inquiry in relation to safeguard duty is the following. If, as a result of unforeseen circumstances, and as a result of your commitment to the WTO, imports enter your country at such a rapid rate and such volumes as to cause injury to the domestic industry that produces competing goods, you are then allowed to then impose duty on a decreasing scale in order to fight those imports. I'll give a recent example. With hot rolled from the major source of that material was made from China, but this instrument, the speaker instrument, is what I call a blunt instrument. When you use it, applies across all countries with which you can trade, except for those developing countries whose portion of imports into country is insignificant. And insignificant means 2%. So I'll make an example. I'll go back to the example of Hot Rod C had said that measures imposed against last year by ICANN. And those duties apply to all countries except a list of developing countries. Amongst them was Taiwan. Taiwan had made presentation to ICANN to say that we are a developing country, one, and two, our imports are insignificant in volume. So those are the three key instruments that then allow us or allow any member of the WTO to exceed its boundary. One thing I should add about safeguards is that they are imposed regardless of whether the goods enter South Africa at a fair price or at an unfair price. So unlike dumping, where you are combating unfair trade practices, with safeguard duty, it doesn't really matter. Your domestic industry is facing serious injury, and you have given an ability to respond. But the challenge with safeguard duty is the following one. A challenge in a commonly used instrument like South African. It has been a commonly used instrument by South African industry. The rate at which it's being used is beginning to pick up. We are seeing the number of applications beginning to increase. The only thing is that the standard that's applicable, as I say, is often not easy to meet, or where it is, because industry is not used to the instrument, they better to put together a viable application. And we have our observation from IT's point of view is that the instruments that are popular at the moment are the ordinary carbon duty, which I think, as I said, are bound. And we see an uptick on safeguard duty and a decline on anti-tax duty. Madam Chair, you said I should explain why anti-dumping duties are not effective or are not being used. Let me just start by saying, in answer to that question, that we don't have a precise answer, and in fact, our policy and research unit has been requested to start from. It's one of the projects that we're trying to do this year. There's been some work or some thinking, but I don't want to present it as something that we have as a solution. One of the finding is that it's an educated guess is an industry. When you look at the import basket of the goods a significant portion of those imports originate from China. And with China, one of the things that South Africa did quite a long time ago before everybody else in the world did was enter into a bilateral agreement with China, which basically gave China a market economy status. The effect of that is basically that when you conduct an anti-dumping investigation against China, whereas in the past you say, oh, China is an economy in terms of its government playing a dominant role, the producers are not operating in the free market or open market, under open market conditions. What is the most comparable country to China in relation to that product? Then say you say, the country next door, Taiwan. You then will use Taiwan to work out a domestic price that you then impute to China. And on that basis, almost always you'll be able to find a significant anti-dumping margin. In trade double, it's called using a salary country for people to send the domestic price in China. So whereas you go to China, in my example again, buy this bottle, you find that this bottle is sold. In China, when you investigate that company, it's sold at one rand per bottle. And when it's exported to South Africa, it's exported at 1 rand per bottle. So you don't see a dumping margin. But when you use a surrogate country, you find that actually, so in my example, if the surrogate country would be Taiwan, you find that actually, if this bottle in China was produced under market economy conditions, it should have cost 2 rand or 2 rand, so the China at 2 rand per bottle. You then say, okay, you give that price to China, and then now suddenly, when you compare it to the exported bottle to South Africa, you see that it's 2 rand versus 1 rand, so the dumping margin is 1 rand. We are then able to get it in China. But when we signed in the agreement that says China is a market economy status, or it's a market economy, we then deprived ourselves that we should do, in my example, can you still go back? It's a political decision, but I should mention that the ability to use that approach under the WTO system expired when, I think 2 years ago, when all countries now under the agreement that China had with the WTO, called China Protocol, not expired, but matured, and in terms of that, then everybody was then required to grant China market economy data. But we did that earlier than anything else. So that is one of the reasons why our incident of credit against China was granted in the first understanding process. I would like to close another number by saying a lot of our work, almost 100% of it, is a function of industries approaching us to say we need a remedy. So if industry doesn't come to us, it's very difficult for us to do anything. Whilst we have the power to initiate investigations on our own, in order for us to come to a reasoned, justifiable decision, we need information. And if industry is not cooperating or is not providing information, we are not in a position then to go to really make progress. So one of the reasons which I would also venture in relation to anti-dumping is that there is, I would call it a reluctance or a reason which we hopefully be able to address. Industry is no longer approaching ITEC to request anti-dumping, or the latest is approaching ITEC I would like to stop and say thank you for the opportunity. If there are any questions, I need to say them.
No, let's thank you very much for the clarity, for clarification around the matters raised. I'm not sure whether members have any questions of clarity or any recommendation around issues that the members have raised.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. And let's also appreciate the presentation by the Chief Commissioner and the Manager. I think the presentation makes it very easy for us to understand the subject in question. I have two small questions for clarity. The WTO regulation for conditions, are they tight enough to enable countries to know the prices of other countries? In your presentation, you indicated that if, for instance, China is selling a particular item at a particular price, and they drop the price when they export it, and the difference is what you will then charge as duties. How easy is it, for instance, like in South Africa, for us to know the pricing of other countries so that we are then able to claim X? That is the first question. And the second one is, what are the reasons? Is it economic reasons? Issues of resources that are preventing you to undertake your own investigation if you are not informed or asked by the industry itself? Thank you very much.
Thanks, and
I think
just to acknowledge the presence of the sugar industry activists. I'll call you that. If it's acceptable to you. Okay, you are mostly welcome. Any other questions or comments? Member, you're looking at me as though you want to be doubting. I'm not saying I'm a little bit puzzled. I'm asking myself some questions to say I can hear what the commissioner is saying around that they cannot charge based on what international media says. So I'm asking myself, are we saying we are allowing people to export things or import things in our country, let me say import, not export, import things in our country that already we've got them there in our country? Or for me, why do you take something that we have? Because that also closes opportunities for our people to grow, for the business people in South Africa to grow. That is one of the things that happens to say most of the time I'm still clothing. Most of the clothes comes from China. But we've got factories that do clothing here. So why is that happening and why do we allow that? We know that it's a free trade, whatever. But are we going to do it to our people suffer based because of the free trade, whatever? I'm a little bit confused, thank you. Thanks, Nyamfuzo. Yeah. people, they people wouldn't understand what we're talking about. Because, yes, in South Africa, we would say this is a developing country, and therefore we owe it to them, not to impose. But the problem is, what that good or product is doing to our country. We're saying, I'm taking from what you said when you opened, you said the primary function of import control and enforcement is to help in growing the economy. So I'm saying, therefore, how do you help? For instance, in a case where you know we have this product being produced and we're struggling because of what is happening internationally that affects us, especially in the economic situation globally, it's not going okay. And obviously other countries would want to take advantage of other countries by doing, you know, that which compromises the economic condition of that particular country. What then do we do to protect our own, you know, from such activity? Because to me, it's taking advantage of us. Yes, we understand a lot. Everybody would come and do as they wish, because yes, we are still developing and want to accommodate others so that you create friendship through agreement, whatever type of agreement that we have with bilaterally or through treaties and so forth. My concern is, what is the country doing to ensure that our people are protected from such? Because truly speaking, we have business people. Our history says a lot. And deprived, especially the previously disadvantaged. Now that we're standing up, we're saying, putting up programs and projects to help the previously disadvantaged, we have other people also coming in with their things, taking advantage of the situation, and also taking advantage of our humanity. To really suppress and make our conditions even worse, thus making our imagine entrepreneur not to thrive. That's a challenge, and I'm asking this, it is both a political and also an administrative question, and I would want to really any other before I hand over?
So my question, thank you for giving me an opportunity. My question is around, is there anything wrong if as South Africans or as a country we can say no, we don't want that? Is there anything that is going to happen to us? It's like now, if we say no, we feel happy. So for me, it's like some of the things, the no area. If you don't want to do something into my house, if I don't want you in my house, I don't want you in my house. So, but in South Africa, it's like everybody can just be into my front door, that, and then you think keep quiet. So that is one of the things to say. Is there any law that is prohibiting us from saying no, we don't want to import into our country? These are what we don't want to do.
But remember that ITEC is one of our economic research reporting, which is entrusted with a very important responsibility around import and export control. We want to really understand, and I don't understand also why don't we have a solution to this, and why have we waited this long? Long as I said to do research around this particular ensuring that we protect our. I understand this part of your way forward, coming up with the research, when that research is completed, when are we anticipating conclusion and the taking of the research report, so that we can also interact with the outcome.
Thank you, honourable members, for those questions. I will deal with them not in order. I will answer the question, all the questions that each honourable member is put in one go. I'll start with honourable member Tian. The first question which was put to us, which was asked by Tian was, how easy is it for South African companies to find, or for South Africa to find price information in relation to a product produced in a foreign country? It is not easy. As a result of that, the ITA Act and our regulations do not impose a terribly high standard or strict standard for a company to provide us what is called prima facie information about price. So our regulations say a single invoice or a single quotation showing a price in the foreign country, the domestic price in the foreign country, is sufficient to enable us to then start investigating. So when we start investigating, we then interact with the particular company in that particular country, which are the subjects, which are producing the subject, so the product is the subject to investigation, and get excellent information from them. But in order for us to start, we need to have a certain minimum case to, and as I said, the act, the regulations recognize that it's a difficult task, and therefore don't, you know, impose a very low standard of evidence for dumping in anything. The second question was, what are the reasons that are preventing ITEC from, of its own accord, to be initiating investigation? The Act does give us the power to initiate investigations on our own. The question is more of a practical one, that take a producer which has exposure, say, to the U.S. Market, and you then approach that company and say, we have noticed that the U.S. is dumping, let's say, aluminium products in South Africa. We want to act against the U.S. on this product. Cooperate with us and give us information. The company turns around and says, but we export 50% or 50% of our sales are made in the U.S. So it's a lucrative market for us. So if you act against the U.S., we are concerned that there might be retaliatory actions by the U.S., which would impact our operation. And then the company says, no, we're not going to cooperate with you, I think. are then given alert with no information. So those are some of the practical challenges that we face. I'll give you another example on Guinea, where South Africa eventually imposed anti-circumcision on Pakistani women. But one of the threats that was brought against South Africa in that case was that Pakistan would stop buying South African coal. So the ships would come to South Africa loading laden with cement, drops went to South Africa, and then on the way back to Pakistan, you see coal to South Africa. So the threat there was, okay, we're going to stop buying coal. And in this instance, Mr. Bindi says, okay, so, but I'm going back again. So there are instances where it is practical to do it, that is instances where it is not practical to do it. Honorable Member Mamfolo, you said that you were puzzled as to why we would allow the importation of goods that we manufacture locally. The first and simple answer is we are part of a multilateral global trade system. We, as much as we want to be able as South Africa to export our goods to other parts of the world, other countries also want to be able to export goods to South Africa. If I make an example of South African companies which produce goods. South Africa is almost about 15 million people. It's not difficult for one company to produce, in South Africa, to produce sufficient goods to meet the needs of the South African market and to export the rest. And there are quite a few South African companies, particularly in the steel sector, which have got vast production capacity. They export in excess of 50% of their total production because the other, they can't sell that 50%. They have not enough buying power. So if you use the motor vehicle industry, the big push that South Africa has is to export, go with exports of cars that are manufactured in South Africa. Because the South African, you know, it allows them, the rural companies, to grow, it allows South Africa to gain from taxes paid by these companies because of the state revenue. So in order for us to play in that in the global trade system, we have to gain the best. So that's the first basic sense. And then let me go back to the second one, which is the one that kind of concerns you this week. Now, does that mean we should allow our industry to die because we want to pay? Chairperson, that's a political choice. What, or it's a question of signing up to the as ITEC, we will do that which is available within our means to try and protect those industries who are protecting the industry. Let me use the clothing sector that you have mentioned. The maximum duty that South Africa can impose on clothing and textile items is 45% of that. And I actually entered construction at the time when before I joined ISIS, when we brought other people to ISIS and he did the raise to the maximum of 45%. And still, so the ISIS from China, in fact, in that East Asia, generally, can absorb. If the cost can't absorb that, then there's something else that's happening at the border that is negating. Or there's something else that's happening in Chinese products, which may we like what's called brown meat with bones in that bone. So what with that product you find that the chicken produced in Europe will be breast will be sold in Europe and the rest will be sold outside Europe at large markets like ours. It's basically a price that we have contended is above the choice between the cost of destroying the product in Europe and what you can recover by exporting the rest of the world. So there's something peculiar about that, about chicken as a product, which makes it cheaper to just throw it away. And there, I think it's a good significant, in some places as high as 80%, but you also then are mindful of the fact that chicken is eaten by is one of the cheaper sources of protein. So you are also wary that you don't create conditions in South Africa that make a critical source of protein so expensive as beyond the reach of the producer. So when you've got some import competition, it forces the domestic producers of that product to moderate their prices in order to compete with the internal product. So you find then that some degree, I think then tries to strike a balance between protecting the industry as well as having at the end the interest of the consumer. And also, one of the benefits of participating in the international trade is that you force your industry to be competitive or to innovate or to invest. And that I will deal with that a bit later when I deal with the question from the chairperson, the one about investment and competitiveness of our industry.
Just make the example of chicken. To me, it's this is a relation that you encourage me. Okay, you said that. The issue is with chicken, we have sufficient producers in South Africa. And now you allow additional people to come in to feed chicken. And you are saying you're encouraging competition. And the standards, you know, competition in terms of increasing standards in relation to natural chicken. But my worry is, does that happen? Because the question from Mem Mfudo was saying, can't we stop? Can't we say no, you can't come in at all? And we are saying no, because here we are net in relations more than anything. That's what the response you are giving is like, we are net in relations, even if it's at the expense of the local firm. So this is where I think I need you to come out clear, because it's you know, we've been hearing people say, if you are saying you are protecting, you are increasing competition, but then at the same time you hear that chicken importers are coming with, you know, certain things like grinding and all that, that really puts the lives of our people in danger. Who are you protecting at the end of the day?
I just need sort of a follow up on what you're saying. I've been studying the relationship between South Africa and China. One thing I've very picked up about the Chinese, most of the time they refuse certain things from us, from South Africa. Let me take an example of the Chinese. There are manufacturers that change the partnership here. The simple screw that a person next door can make it, China doesn't want it onto their locomotive because the screws must come from China. Simple thing. And yes, Tina. We are allowing them to dictate. They are also nursing the relationship. You know what? Because we give otherwise you want to eat coal. The question is, are they the only people buying coal from South Africa, or is there other countries? We need to tell them, no, it's fine. If you don't take our coal, we don't run the sales to another country. It's a tit for tat, and it's how we play this green mind game, because that's what they are doing. But see, now we are not doing it that way. We keep on saying, because politicians have signed agreements, so we need to nail that situation. That's exactly what the chairperson is saying. Are we doing that on behalf of our people to suffer, or are we doing that? Because as politicians, we may agree. But you as an administrator or whatever they call it, you know, administrator, you need to protect what the politician is saying. You need to make it clear to us as politicians and say, if you go this route, you're going to fall. But you've already signed this route, these are the challenges of the route that you took. How do you get out of it? It's your own challenge. But if you say it's been taken by them and you leave it, they're not taking the same stuff. So that's how I come and say. I mean, I'm not making it simple like I understand. I don't know if it's the right thing, but that's how I teach this to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Mom Polo. And what you are saying about politicians, I don't think there's a signing of agreement. You know, the whole thing by politicians is preceded by engagement by our technocrats. Our technocrats engage and, you know, allow the or create necessary environment for politicians to come in. So if really the work is not thoroughly done, politicians, based on the advice that they are getting, they will then sign. So that's another situation that we really need to venture to talk to. Before that, yes, I know that we were making this follow up so that we don't come back to that issue. We want to dispose of the issue. You bear with us. Yes. That is again, on the same issue again. Follow up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, it's not a question per se, but it's just a statement. I think there is something that the Chief Commissioner mentioned at the beginning of his presentation, which I think is very crucial. The population of South Africa is expected to increase significantly. China is worth over 2 billion. So it is domestically, it already has a huge market. In recent years, it has grown many tentacles to go into many other countries. So while we can tell them where to get from, our options are very limited. There is this thing in South Africa, people have been told that we need to have small families, you know, so that we can survive economically and so on. Maybe that is a good thing. But, you know, in other countries like India, I think it's over a billion there as well. So we also need to look into those things, you know, while we want to stand and touch on some of the countries. I'm just mentioning it because it is also working against us. We feel the same thing when it comes to music and the arts. Our artists say, when an artist and musician first comes to $5,000, they say it's gold, it's gold or platinum, it's $5,000. And then those other artists, like when they say it's gold, then it's 10 million. So financially, you know, that artist is in a better position. So I'm saying, yes, we need to fight this mistake to sort of, but at the same time, realize that we begin from a point of
thanks. Look at Botswana. Tell me what's the population of Botswana. But what is Botswana doing to save us? I think those are things that we need to also look at in the picture. And we're not just looking at the big economy. We're looking also at the interests of the people. What comes first? This is a debate for the other, you know, time that we really need to engage on. That the mind may come.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me answer the question, are there circumstances when we can say no to a policy?
No.
Yes. cannot import those unless we give ITAC a permit, gives a permit to import. And the only time that you get a permit is if you import what's called goods to make this copper, to make rice, or to make rum. If you import coal that are meant for the poorest of the poor, other than that, you are not allowed. And even there, the allocation is a quota. So you are allowed a maximum volume of X. Once you breach that, which has been the case with one of the the beneficiary of that thing to the way we are just delivering that the way you reach the sentence is then not. So there are instances where we do. And again, the reason and the rationale is to protect South African government sectors against corruption from Sahel. So are there instances where we cannot say no? Yes. And that's because of our membership in WTO, which, as I said, the basic funding principle is treat the domestic producers or foreign producers the same way as treat the domestic producers if you want to pay in the global infrastructure. So, there are a limited set of circumstances where you can say if there's the second question about the contribution of technical people to conversations between South Africa and foreign countries. It's not always that the technical advice finds expression in the ultimate agreement. Let me use as an example the AGOA negotiations or AGOA process between South Africa and the U.S. Association Against Cheating. There, I think, a high level of customs duty in place against U.S. chicken. On top of that, it had anti-dumping duty. So it was basically a war. And for a long time, there was only U.S. chicken. Came 2015 or 2016, the American Growth and Opportunity Act, which allows South Africa and other African countries to export their goods into the U.S. market to be free, was up for the year. And the U.S. chicken lobby decided, ha, of course they're now. They lobbied the politicians to say to South Africa must remove anti-dumping duties that are in place against U.S. chicken up to a maximum of 65,000 tons, I think. 5,000 tons? There was South Africa just agreed to that. I'm sorry, here I might be talking my book because I was sitting on the other side, acting for the chicken industry, making the decision I can today. There is no reason for us to agree to it. They said, oh, okay, you don't want to allow our chicken into your country? We're going to assume from our own. So when your goods come into our country, they will be subject to the duties that goods from Europe or goods from Texas are subject to. South Africa considered that and thought, okay, we allow you to come back to the 65,000 countries. So that's not a decision of ITAC, it's not a combination of ITAC, it's a decision that the negotiators except for South Africa, may taking all factors into account that they consider. So it's not only that our technical advice finds expression at the end, but yes, I agree with you that a lot of the negotiations are based on the technical advice. And the first thing was status such a thing and then another set of things. So I my answer to you was why have we started doing this now? In part it has to do with the fact that the thinking was maybe part of the action to side of the one of the key positions that you want to see is the that of the chief economist, which will assist us to do an economic effect study of our work, addressing some of the questions that you've asked. What is your work doing? What's the effect on the economy? What's the effect on the research sector? We need to appoint the chief economist. We are trying to reprioritize our budget by giving CDB to China and the funds. That's one example of the important aspect of our work. leaving certain posts vacant just to manage the commission that has been provided just in particular. Okay.
Okay, then what happened to the post of order the incumbent?
He resigned in November last year, and I understand now the Egyptian Trade Authority. By the way, just to mention, Madam Chair, that South Africa is, I think, the only two countries with the type of trade unions that I can have. Others on the continent, as we are sitting in Zimbabwe, starting that in the city of Zimbabwe's president, and Nigeria is still going to set up that. But yes, Dr. Moses resigned in November last year.
You say in terms of workforce, which areas, for instance, are in shortage so that we are able to.
Because of the litigious environment in this function, we generally like to have a fully equipped legal section. So our legal manager is, we don't have a legal manager in our senior manager legal is on the team. So we are starting that from our fully benefited person now doing in addition to the legal work. So it should be great if we a legal manager there. And then lastly, we also have like on the special advisor position, which is also quite an expensive position in terms of the status of those are the Botswana and Namibia are the consumers of sugar which they use to produce different things in soft drinks. They want to be able to have access to sugar at the cheapest possible price. And South Africa wants to protect the local sugar industry and then impose things. So there is that tension between Southern and South Africa on the one side, Botswana and Namibia on the other. And that process is and above us, we just make an example on the questions that are asked. But generally, do, as a matter of course, in every case, invite our member, the Sakhona State, to make a presentation in relation to all the institutions that we conduct. And it does happen that some of the institutions that we conduct, but in the very rest, are at the request of other member states. The one that comes to mind is in relation to Solar Ash, which was conducted at the cost of Rwanda, and Solar Ash producers in Rwanda. So I would say those are the highlights. I mean, the things are about the conditions.
Yeah, can we hear from
us?
Oh, you
were referring to? I was referring to Sunday, who used to sit on all the stuff.
The chief commissioner has already said the mouthful on the SACU issue. Because we are setting the times for all the member states, they've been complaining that we do this to favor South African companies. So perhaps what is part of the agenda is to renegotiate the tariff setting agreement. And we are making it good. Because the state for us is that most of the industry is in South Africa, over 90% actually. So if we lose the policy space, so give it to the other members to decide our tariffs, it can actually affect the work that we are trying to do. So, but that is being renegotiated. The tariff setting agreement, what the commissioner is mentioning, what we do is that it is applicable to the rest of the member states. And that is where they are uncomfortable, they want us to be negotiated. More like democratized, it's be more involved in the time setting. Okay. Yeah, so this is what is on the agenda.
The update on the sugar industry, the dollar-based reference price issue.
Madam Chair, thank you again. There are two processes regarding sugar. The first one is what I call the process which is in ordinary course. So we've got what's called a variable duty that goes up and down. The last week, there was a based on the trigger basically is the global price of sugar. And the last trigger could result in an increase in the duty from 42% to 35%. That should have been done or will be done shortly. So that's the ordinary process. And then there's the what I call the extraordinary process, where the basis of the formula treaty will change. That process is proceeding apace, and we have received input from industry, and that input is currently in process. What remains to be done is to have oral presentations and ultimately to have a decision on the matter. As to when that will happen, I can't give a date sitting here, but I know that we will not see 6 months in the process.
Okay.
They've got the two people that have been too long, which is that they so that should be some relief.
So the two has been.
I don't know if it's sufficient, but it's
no, they are shaking their heads. Okay. Yeah. My researcher is asking me to ask what the maximum we can import on sugar.
I think it's just a last question. A few years ago, there was some talk from the continent about the need to create a free trade test that was generated by the European Union and the advantage we saw before, especially after the Union took the initiative to pull out. Are those discussions continuing, or is it a dead topic at the moment? There are, only remember that two processes. There was the tripartite between India process, which involved three regions, the East Africa Community, COMESA, and SADC. That was done in that way. There's now a further process which is looking at including North Africa for the entire continent. And my understanding is that agreement has been reached, and South Africa is going through the process of the ratifying that agreement, and that's the parliamentary process.
What does that mean?
You know, the beauty of us being on this continent is that in total, the African population exceeds a billion. It's a young population. So it's a growing population. And as we see now, the proportion of South African exports that are sold in the rest of the African community is about 26%. So once we as we continue to make trade easy between ourselves and the rest of the continent, it means we are able as a country to increase our exports to the rest of the continent, which then supports implementation in the South Africa. And we've got what I call a comparative advantage, because unlike China, which is 10,000 miles away, DRC is 1,500 kilometers away. So it's quite important.
Thank you. I'm told it's 105%. All right. The good news about the Chinese, the new life. Do you want to share with us? The case is apparently that okay, no, that's not the minister, but what is important is that you are reviewing that.
Yes.
And the chances are good.
We expect that to be able to do it
for another 5 years. Okay.
The investigation is...
Yeah. I'm asking you to talk to this because I know most of the time we say negative things about us being lenient to China. It is important also to talk about areas where we active against, you know, China protests in South Africa.
I am happy specifically to give a short report on the measures that we have taken against China. And there's quite a few, as I should mention. There's quite a few.
I think we need to balance, yes. We don't want to be, you know, experiencing difficulties in relation to the, because of the strength of China, and because we're weaker, and then therefore we need to be accepting everything from China. We also need to show that we do have strength in other areas where we can act, we do act. And we want to appreciate you for that, for the work that you have done. The questions that you've been asking, it's not because we undermine the effort that you're putting into the work that you're doing, and the work, or because we don't value the work that you're doing. It's simply because we want to see South Africans be protected at all times. And because of the technical nature of this, institution, sometimes, you know, it's not easy for us as a committee to really, and the mere fact that the implementing department is DTI, it becomes a bit difficult sometimes to really deal with the issues of the community. But we promise you, where possible, where we feel there are policy areas that we're, and we feel that we need to come in, we will do so, just to ensure that we protect our people, and also to also make sure that we strengthen you. Hence, we've been asking, are there areas where you would need assistance from the committee so that you are able to talk on your behalf and then to motivate on your behalf? Because sometimes you want to tell us that, no, everything is fine, and going out there, we hear people just saying different things. And at the same time, we feel like we are not supported. We will try to protect where we can, yes. But at the end of the day, we want free trade. So, colleagues, I don't know if you have any other things. I'm not sure whether it's because you are clear on the issues that have been presented to us, or you're still pondering on those issues. Or you're satisfied that the knowledge you have is sufficient. I will, without, if in the absence of any further questions or comments, use the opportunity to thank you very much for this presentation and the manner in which you really presented the issues to us. You were just in a very simple language, and so sometimes I know technocrats, because they used to these issues, they deal with these issues on a daily basis, they take for granted that members will understand. Members might be responsible for passing the law, but the fact of the matter, the implementation sometimes can be above us. And it's important that we get clarity, and in a very simple language. Not only to us, but also to the people, South Africans, because they're not only talking to us, they're also talking to our people out there. And they must be confident that the issues that we've been dealing with also issues that they can interact with ordinary people. So thank you so much for using that single language. Otherwise, members, we'll see you on Tuesday.
Well,
Yes.